And Dr. Leanne Young joins me now. Dr. Young, it's a pleasure to have you on. We've never had the opportunity to meet before.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, you're a neuroscientist at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, right?
That's right.
Now, I read the other day, there are a number of websites ago looking for topics for the show, and you know, my interests are pretty weird, eclectic, I guess, if you're being polite. And I saw this mention at Instapundit about a study that had been done in which scientists figured out a way to at least temporarily disrupt the ability of the human brain to make moral decisions. I probably shorthanded too much, and they say if you simplify science too much, you distort it. But can you give us the lowdown on this? How do you go about turning somebody's morality, the part of their brain that does morality, on and off?
Sure. So we used a technique called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS for short. And essentially, this is a neurophysiological tool that allows us to induce a current in the brain by passing a magnetic field through the sculpin skull. And this essentially scrambles neural activity temporarily in specific brain areas. And now, based on a lot of other previous research that had been done by Rebecca Sachs, who's the senior author on the paper, we knew where to look in the brain for the part of the brain that supports our ability to reason about the beliefs, desires, and intentions of other people when we're making moral judgments of their behavior.
Because it's only as adults that we learn how to make moral judgments. As children, children don't do as well at that, right?
Well, children make different sorts of moral judgments. I'm not sure it'd be fair to say that they don't know how to do it at all, but they certainly rely on different factors when they're making moral judgments. So typically, young children might make moral judgments more based on concrete outcome information, that is, the effects that people actually have in the world, as opposed to what they're actually intending to do. So, of course, you can have cases where intentions and outcomes are out of sync, where I could try to do some good in the world but actually fail to do so and end up, you know, making a lot of mistakes and causing accidents and so on. And then you can have other sorts of cases where people actually try to do harm, but because of false beliefs or misunderstandings, fail to do that harm that they want to do.
All right. So, and there's a way to turn this part of the brain off. Where is it actually located?
So this part of the brain is called the right temporoparietal junction, and it's a patch of cortex right above and behind the right ear.
Yes.
And, and so it seems that when we temporarily disrupt activity in this part of the brain, that we bias people away from reasoning about other people's intentions, and we make people judge behavior more based on the outcomes of their actions.
So how would you go about testing that if you had a test subject in front of you? Because you've done this with real people, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we brought in 20 volunteer subjects, one at a time, of course. And we first scanned all of their brains so that we could identify this brain region. And then we targeted this part of the brain, again, using transcranial magnetic stimulation. And we had people read a series of moral stories, again, manipulating these factors of intentions and outcomes. So in one of these stories, our subject would read about a girl who tried to poison her friend. She thought that she was putting poison into her friend's coffee, but the powder turned out to be regular sugar, and so her friend was absolutely fine in drinking that coffee. It was, you know, merely sugar and not poison. And so when we disrupted activity in this part of the brain, subjects would be more likely to judge that as morally permissible as opposed to forbidden, even though the person acting had a harmful intention, that is, an intention to harm her friend.
And the test showed that you could reliably disrupt this in people.
Yeah, this effect seemed to obtain across individual subjects and, in fact, even across two different experiments that were conducted in different locations. So the effects are definitely there. They're subtle effects, so we don't completely reverse people's moral judgments. We just introduce this important bias away from what typically dominates moral judgments, and that is people's mental states, like beliefs, intentions, and desires.
So tell me this, what do you think the practical application of that might be? Because at least one of the sites I went to said, what if we could do this with a spy, you know, do it with an Al-Qaeda terrorist and say, we need you to tell us who the other bad guys are. And we've turned off his sense of right or wrong. And he thinks, oh, well, I'll tell him who the other bad guys are. I mean, do you see this being used for either good purposes or bad purposes?
Well, you know, it's tricky because it's also important to remember that our study focused on moral judgments. That is how we judge other people's behavior as opposed to actual real behavior. And so, of course, there's going to be a connection between judgments and behavior, but we're not sure exactly what that is. And it'll be a long ways before we'll use this technology to look at moral behavior in these kinds of contexts. And, of course, morality is also tricky because we all think that we have a sense of right and wrong, but who's to say we're right?
Well, and in fact, we have people we call sociopaths where the sense of right and wrong doesn't appear to be present or it's not turned on. Do you think this might have an application in figuring out how to turn their sense of right and wrong back on in some of the people who never had it?
Well, it's tough. This technology can also be used to enhance brain activity in addition to suppressing brain activity, which is what we used it for.
It can? This is like steroids for mental steroids for geeks.
it's a complicated technology, and there are a lot of various parameters that can be tweaked in order to manipulate the effects. And this technology is also being used to treat various clinical disorders too. But we're at the tip of the iceberg in terms of exploring the application of this technology for scientific purposes in studying moral judgment and moral behavior.
So, but you mentioned enhancing brain activity. You could actually get somebody's brain to work better.
Well, we haven't tried to, or I certainly haven't tried to do it yet, and not with respect to moral judgment. And it's an interesting question because typically, intention information, as I was saying, dominates people's moral judgments to begin with. And so often, we don't think about anything else aside from people's intentions anyway. And so it's not clear that we'd be able to boost that effect even more than we already see it in healthy populations. And as for, you know, patients with brain damage, that's a really open question, and I'm not sure how we would go about doing that. But it's certainly an interesting area of investigation.
And does this little effect where you're basically running a magnetic pulse near their or behind their ear, it's not doesn't have a permanent effect, doesn't permanently turn off their moral judgment?
No, not in our case. In our case, we used certain parameters such that the effects are very temporary. So we applied stimulation in one of our experiments for about half an hour, 25 minutes, and that gives us effects lasting between 50% and 200% of that amount of time. And so the actual moral judgment test took a little over 10 minutes. And that's the kind of time window that we had of neural function suppression.
Do you think you could make it permanent? I worry about what somebody might do if they thought they could permanently turn off somebody's moral judgment and then you know perhaps persuade them to do things they wouldn't otherwise do.
Yeah, well, that's certainly a scary thought.
I mean, they've made whole Hollywood movies about things like that. Manchurian Candidate comes to mind, but
yep.
Well, okay, where does this research head next, and where can people, lay people like me and the people who listen to this program, read something that you don't have to be a PhD at MIT to understand, Doctor?
Well, I think that what this tells us about moral psychology is that our morality is rooted in brain processes that we can selectively target and disrupt, you know, one at a time, and that we might have multiple systems for making moral judgments, a system for making judgments based on intentions, and maybe another system for making moral judgments based on outcomes. And I think in the future, we can use this technology to study the role of other brain regions for making moral judgments and for choosing how to act and how to behave in the world. You know, the hope is to figure out the role of all of these neural processes and cognitive processes for not only how we make moral judgments of harmful actions, but how we make judgments in other moral domains too. So not just harm, but also concerns of fairness and loyalty and community and so on. And so I think that, again, we're just at the you know, starting line for all of the interesting new stuff to be done in the future.
Doctor, what's a good website for people to go to if they want to read about this at a lay level? Do you know? Is there one?
A website? Goodness.
Do you know anybody who's written it up at that kind of level? You know, not the PhD level, doctor.
Yeah, you know, I think actually if you just Google probably morality and magnet right now, there'll be a lot of articles covering this kind of research. So that might be a place to start. The internet won't let you down.
Dr. Young, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, ma'am. 15 minutes before the hour. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.